You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn, and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on FoxSports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're on the line with Noah Gardner and Jacob Goins on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. 334-321-1390 is the number to call or toll free at 888-382-7502. Jacob, what's up?
Hump day. That's what's going on. Auburn basketball plays tonight.
It's I forgot about that.
I'm going to the games. That's the only reason I really remembered.
Look at you.
Yeah, man. Going to the game.
And I'm 8 o'clock.
I'm not going for a student. I'm going because I have a physical ticket. Or not a physical ticket. It's on your cell phone now, but you know.
I was like, how did you get one of those?
That's more rare than anything.
You may not be actually going to the game, Jacob. Sorry. Yeah, may be fake.
Yeah, something.
Pulls out a piece of copy paper.
What?
Yeah. No, I'm going to the game tonight. I'm going with Erica, my girlfriend, so we're going to go. And
is this Valentine's Day?
Yeah,
related?
Sure. I didn't buy them, but yeah, sure.
Who did?
They're my dad's.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they're my dad's, but he's not going. He lives in Birmingham, so he's like, here, you can have these tickets. 8 o'clock games are just tough for him to come to, so yes, me and Erica are going to the basketball game tonight. Should be a good one, and hope Auburn does what they got to do.
We've got lined up for us today at 2:30, Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. He'll be on the show with us. Stay tuned for that conversation coming up at 2:30 for all things Auburn Athletics. We'll preview tonight's game against Vanderbilt with him as well as with each other here on the show. We watch your takes throughout the program. Phone lines are open every segment except for that segment with Justin Ferguson. We're taking your calls on anything going on in the athletic department. Anything going on in the sports world, we want your takes. 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. As well as we'll have our on-the-line Q&A coming up at hour number two. That's where Jacob and I have questions prepared for each other that we'll answer, as well as that's where we'll take your questions. Kind of a mailbag segment. Send them in. Find us on Twitter at ESPN1067. We're going to start off the show today with Auburn football. There has been some news, reports. These are rumors, but you have at least seen them picked up by various news cycles here locally, whether it be 24/7 Sports or On Three. I saw a tweet last night from Philip Dukes at Dukes the Scoop. He contributes to 24/7 Sports, as well as Justin Hokanson has talked about this. Defensive tackle / defensive end Colby Wooden apparently will be staying with the Auburn football program. Didn't know there was a chance he could be leaving.
I didn't either until it started coming out. And you could say it's a rumor.
You could see stuff on social media.
Exactly. But the good thing is, very quickly, the rumors were shut down. And whether the rumor was true or not and then became, you know, changed his mind, we don't really know what happened here. But rumors were circulating that defensive tackle Colby Wooden for Auburn football might possibly be leaving the program. Okay. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know. But then, as you mentioned, 24/7 Sports came out and said, this is not happening. And also, Justin Hokanson from Auburn Live, or On Three, he came out and also said from his sources and his reports that Colby Wooden is staying here at Auburn.
This is a big thing for Auburn, a big win for Brian Hartson. We talked about throughout this week Auburn being able to quench the fires that we had over the last week and a half. Things settling down, and of course we've talked about the departure of Burt Watts, but there were reports and rumors surfacing last week that Zach Etheridge could go to Georgia. He has stayed with the program. You've seen some big players like a Colby Wooden now. They're coming back, avoiding the transfer portal. These are wins for Auburn. Big W's.
They're W's that Brian Hartson and this program are desperate to have, and it's crazy to think that the W's, you know, the quote-unquote W's are just keeping your own people here. I mean, that's, I hate to say it like that, but that's really what this is right now. It's just Brian Hartson trying to keep the guys that are still here, whether they're players or coaches, just to keep them here because of how much Auburn has lost over the past month, month and a half. So, yeah, it is a major victory because Colby Wooden, I mean, he's an animal. He's a fantastic player.
He's the best defensive player on
exactly.
Auburn's 2022 roster.
And if he leaves,
he may be the best player on Auburn's 2022 roster.
Exactly. So you know, if he leaves, I mean, that's just fuel to the fire on what's been going on around Auburn. But hopefully the reports are true that he is staying with Auburn.
334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502 if you've got anything to contribute to the show today. Brian Harsin seems to be settling some things down. Maybe all of the folks that have defected from the program, things are reining in a little bit. Brian Harsin earning some W's over the last week, retaining a Zach Etheridge, a Colby Wooden. He's got guys inside the program, veteran leadership inside the program. Folks have said to me a lot off air. Folks have even called in on air about my optimism with the Auburn football program. I'm optimistic. Now, I'm not certain that things are headed in a positive trajectory after 2022, and I'm not certain that Auburn is going to win the amount of games that we talked about yesterday that this team and that what you and I have deemed that this team needs to hit for us to feel good about 2023, and that this thing is indeed heading in a positive direction. I'm just saying the opportunity is there with the schedule that we're looking at and the roster that Auburn has this year, and if they can achieve that opportunity, if they can rise to the occasion and win 9 games in a football season, my whole point is, and this was the point that I was making about the football team last year, 2021, if you can have a solid season that gets folks' attention, that is going to help you in recruiting. And don't tell me that that's not possible. Auburn was at 6-2 this past year. Of course, extenuating circumstances sent this thing spiraling off the tracks on a 5-game losing streak. But even look at what type of impact Auburn's recruiting saw from Auburn losing in triple or quadruple overtime, whatever it was, quadruple overtime to Alabama. Imagine what that, think about what that did. It helped Auburn get to 13th at the time on early signing day. A loss did that for Auburn. Imagine what going 9-4 or 10-3 could do for this Auburn football team. And we can see that the opportunity is there with this roster. That will help resuscitate. It will be the defibrillator. I hope I said that right. The defibrillator. It's a hard word to say,
defibrillator.
Man.
Defibrillator.
I don't think that's right either. There's an R in there.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure.
I'll take your word for it.
I'm pretty sure. Come on. Defibrillator. Okay, here we go. That is going to resuscitate the Auburn football program's recruiting at this point. I just made myself sound like I'm uneducated. It's a hard word to pronounce. Go ahead, Jacob.
Well, that's my response to that is, you know, there's no reason to be negative at this point. And I'm not calling anybody out specifically. I'm just saying Auburn fans in general, if you are negative right now, then you're just wanting them to fail. You're wanting Brian Harsin to fail. And there's no reason to go into the season with that mentality, because there's a real chance that Auburn could do something special in the next couple of seasons. But it starts right now with a successful season this year. I think 8 wins is bare minimum for what would be deemed a successful season this year. But we talked about it yesterday on the schedule. There are games that Auburn can pick up wins this year, and it's a doable task to get to at least 8 wins, if not more. I think you mentioned 10-3. That may be pushing it a little bit. But with Auburn, you just never know. This is the type of season that Auburn would come in here and have a 10-win season and make noise in a playoff race or something like that. But I think having optimism coming into this season should be the way to go, because there is a lot of things positive to look at when you look at this roster and when you look at the current coaches. I like everybody that's on this staff and in those rooms. And in my opinion, I think we should all be behind Brian Harsin and this program, because there are good things going on and there are very high potential levels for this Auburn football team. I know it's still early, but you got to have positivity and be positive and support this program, because if you don't support the players and the coaches, it's going to go bad. And that's my take on it.
Defibrillator.
So there is an R.
There is an R, 100%.
I would say,
if you take the defib part off, it becomes easier to say. Fibrillation, that's an easy word to say. Why can I not do that with defib? Defibrillation.
I bet probably 70.
See, the word, I don't know what happens. My brain is just like, does not compute.
I bet 75% of Americans pronounce that word wrong. And myself included. I'm in
how
there.
Did you think you, how did you think you said it?
Defibrillator. No R in there. I'd said defibrillator.
That sounds like a super villain. The defibrillator.
Yeah, that's why it's kind of cool, you know? Get the defibrillator and you know,
go into it. Defibrillator. Defibrillator.
Wow, I'm not going to even try to say that on the radio.
Man. I knew that's what it was, and then you were over here calling out my intelligence.
Okay, look, I was wrong.
I see how it is.
I was wrong. I calling your intelligence out. I was wrong, and I was wrong, America. I was wrong.
334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. That will get you through to us here on the program. If you're optimistic about Auburn football, we've had a lot of people call in worried about the future. If you're optimistic, what are you optimistic about? What's got you holding on to the future for Auburn football, that all this stuff is going to subside and everything's going to be good with the Auburn football program? Colby Wooden reports recently suggesting that he is returning to the program if there was any type of threat that he could be leaving. Auburn's defense has amassed a lot of talent on that side of the football. They've got a lot of guys coming back in the front seven that should help keep this unit from a run-stopping perspective exactly where it was at, if not better than it was a year ago.
And I think, and if you can look at the recruiting class coming in, it's defense heavy. I mean, there's a lot of...
On the back end. I would say the secondary, yes.
The secondary, that's what I was going to say. The secondary is extremely loaded in this class that's coming in, which is good because that's somewhere that Auburn is 50-50 on, it seems like. You either have some really good guys...
Well, they lost so many guys to the transfer portal
exactly.
When Brian Harsin came in because they saw they weren't going to be playing right away. You lost Marco Domio, Kamal Haddon left, as well as, trying to think of other names, safety Chris Thompson. I mean, mm-hmm. you lost a handful of players to the transfer portal because they were going to be fifth or sixth on the depth chart.
And that's tough, and that's hard to replace, but I think Auburn did a good job in this recruiting class to do so.
You lost Dreshawn Miller. There's another name that just transferred out this past year because he wasn't playing. You know, I mean, you lost a handful, so it was back in heavy, and you saw some JUCO players named to that.
Yeah, but I don't think the defensive side of the ball is something that Auburn is going to have to worry about with the recruits coming in and the guys coming back. We've talked about that, and I've made that a huge point myself. The guys coming back on this team are really going to make a big impact, and they may be able to make up for the lack of recruiting, if you will. Not that 18th is bad, but we've had that discussion 100 times on this show how obviously that's not good enough. But I think the guys coming back on this roster to play one more year can almost be like a placeholder until Auburn can get that good recruiting class. And if you look at what the coaches and recruits are saying for that 2023 class, they're saying they're building something special, and they truly feel that they're going to pull, you know, a top 15, top 10 class in the country. So that's going to be my take on that is I think the players coming back and the current players on this roster can be a so-called placeholder while this recruiting class is not what Auburn really wants until they can get that 2023 class. And that's going to be the determining factor. If that's a top 15, top 10 class, Harsin may end up being a good coach here. But if it's another 18th class in the country, bottom half of the SEC, it's not going to last very long.
I want to steer this in a different direction, talking about where Auburn needs to improve, because we're just talking about the defense and how it's probably pretty set for 2022, maybe not necessarily for 2023. Nothing about this football program is set for 2023, but talking about the offense now for 2022 and what it needs. We've talked about quarterbacks, offensive linemen, wide receivers. They brought in two quarterbacks. Could there be one more that maybe they want to bring in? And I'm not saying that I have any information on this because I don't, and I haven't actually seen any connections to Auburn other than a Saturday Down South article titled Brian Harsin's Next Move? Go get JT Daniels. I don't know if you gentlemen forgot, JT Daniels has been in the transfer portal for about a month now.
That's crazy. I had forgotten that he was in the transfer portal, I will admit. And I remember seeing something about that.
You probably forgot he was on Georgia's football team.
No, I remember he was on the football team. But I remember when he first transferred, you know, you always, on the initial tweet or whatever, when the guy hits the portal, everybody in the comments, you know, Auburn, Miami, Alabama, Penn State, you know, they're just saying wherever they want him to go. And I saw somebody say Auburn, and I was like, that's really interesting. And then I just forgot about it. And like
you
said,
it makes a lot of sense.
It would make a lot
of sense. He's the ideal quarterback for this system.
I would be over the moon if JT Daniels came to Auburn. But how do you bring a guy in when you've already got five of them in the room? How do you do that? And you've already brought Calzada in from the transfer portal.
You get a piece of paper and you get him to sign it. That's how you do it.
And if you do that, three of the five at least are gone.
A fax machine may be involved.
Nah, wait, not anymore, man. Not anymore.
Really? They don't fax in? They don't fax in their signatures anymore?
I'm 22 years old. I've never used a fax machine in my life.
Neither have I, but I still think they fax in the... Okay, Trevor's saying that he uses a fax machine.
Really?
At his other job.
Okay, fair enough. I didn't know those still existed.
Yes, they do.
I thought that was like the...
What, you think it was a VHS?
That's what I was about to say. I thought it was like a VHS. That's exactly what I was going to say, man.
Oh, man.
I still got my VHS, by the way.
A CD player? You ever seen one of those?
My truck's got a CD player in it. 1997.
That's not what I was talking about. Most cars still do have CD players in them. I mean an actual CD player that you would carry around and
like
have
a Walkman,
headphones on.
Right?
A little bit more advanced than that, but yes. I can't believe he just said that. I cannot believe. So you did not grow up with the age of the CD players. You only had iPods.
Yeah, I mean, I had like the radio CD player. It was a radio.
I'm not talking about boom boxes.
Oh, well then, yeah,
boom
I
boxes
guess.
Still exist.
Yeah, I guess.
Nobody uses them. They use speaker systems that connect wirelessly to
But my boom box had a top part where you could put an actual CD in there.
Right.
Yeah.
But you didn't have like a portable CD player that you walked around with?
No, I had an iPod.
Whoa.
iPod Nano, whoa. I think. But the one that didn't have a screen, just a little square, you know?
Whoa.
We have gone off the rails on this discussion, but to go back to what we were talking about, you talked about JT Daniels possibly, not possibly, just throwing a name out there to come to Auburn to play quarterback. That would shake the entire college football world. Is there any legitimacy to that actually happening? Like, I just don't see that. I would love it. I would be over the moon about that. But Auburn has five guys in there. I think they brought Zach Calzada in to be the man for the job.
A lot of the quarterbacks have already moved, though, man. A lot of these places aren't looking for a quarterback, and he's going to get – say he goes to a major program, right? Where's he going to go? Like, if he wants to go to another major program, where's he going to go?
I would say like a Big Ten
school. Tell me a place – no, I'm talking a major program, though. I'm not talking about a Northwestern. I'm talking about a major program. Not just a Power 5 school, but name a major program that's looking for a quarterback right now. After the initial shakeups.
I mean, you could go to Michigan or Penn State.
Is Michigan looking for a quarterback? Isn't Cade McNamara still there?
Yeah, but...
Hey, he did just fine.
Yeah.
He
what
did
about
just
Penn State?
Fine.
Is what's his name still
Sean
there?
Sean Clifford is
Clifford?
There.
Is he still
he
there?
He came back.
Okay. Well, then, yeah. I don't know, man.
So he's going to end up having to sit or compete with somebody who's already established. And Cade McNamara may still not be at Michigan. Trevor, get on that. Tell us if Cade McNamara has graduated from Michigan or not. But I know
I can't
he transferred.
Remember.
He transferred from Texas Tech. I just didn't know if he had one or... if he just had this year left for his eligibility, but
what
Ohio
about
State's
Oklahoma?
Not looking. Oklahoma's got a certain who was it? They got Dylan Gabriel.
Oh yeah,
Dylan Gabriel.
Yeah, interesting.
Is Florida looking for a quarterback?
Yeah,
Florida get a quarterback transfer.
Yeah, I'm sure they
Henry
are.
Henry Jones said he was transferring, but I can't remember if he decided to come back or not.
It'd be I'm shocked that he's still in the portal. That's crazy. I did
Ole Miss
not remember
got
that.
Their quarterback.
Ole Miss got their quarterback.
Alabama has their quarterback.
Of course.
Auburn doesn't.
So you're saying that you want him to go in the SEC then, JT Daniels?
Yeah, I'm saying come to Auburn. I'm saying Auburn would be an open spot for him. That would make sense if you're talking about major programs in college football that need quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because a lot of them have already found their quarterback. Oregon's got Bo Nix, right? Like the stuff like in college football where it makes sense for him to still get the eyeballs and the exposure and the coverage. And Trevor, he is staying. So Cade McNamara is still at Michigan. So that one's off the table, I think. I mean, Auburn makes a lot of sense. I don't know where some of these other locations he would look at, but Auburn, to me, makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think JT Daniels is a great quarterback, and he lost his opportunity because he got hurt, but he's still a fantastic quarterback. He was starting at Georgia for a reason. And
LSU has their QB. Texas A&M has their QB. I'm just saying.
It's possible. It's not that we know anything. It would be interesting. But you would think there would be reports of Auburn at least talking to him if that was an interest of anything. I don't see it, man. I think Auburn's got five of them in there. I think they're just going to try and work with what they've got. They brought in Zach Calzada. Not that he is better than JT Daniels, but I think that's what they are looking to use. And I know Calzada committed to Austin Davis. But still, I think Calzada's the man. I think he is going to be the starter for Auburn.
Let's see if Emory Jones is still with Florida, whether or not that matters for this. But I think that Emory Jones is still with the team. Yeah, Emory Jones is still with the team as well as Anthony Richardson at Florida. So, no, I mean, there's some potential there in that quarterback room. If Emory Jones had entered the transfer portal, I would have toyed around with the decision of him coming to Auburn. I know you're shaking your head, but the guy has 67% completion percentage.
Yeah.
Give me that. Brian Harsin can work with that, I think. I know he wasn't great at Florida, but I mean, he was better than Zach Calzada at Texas A&M.
Ooh.
I think so.
Interesting. Okay. That's a good take, and I like you bringing up JT Daniels into this conversation. Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about Auburn basketball here on the line. Welcome back in On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner here with you today on the Wednesday edition of the show, February 16th. Call in. Give us your opinion on Auburn football, Auburn basketball game tonight against Vanderbilt, or anything else going on in the sporting world. Give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Let's head to the phone lines. Dan is on line one. Dan, welcome in.
Hey, thanks, guys. I'm driving down the road, so hopefully it's not too loud.
You sound good. Hit me with it.
Yeah, well, I got some good info. I talked to a current upperclassman this weekend and four incoming freshmen, and just kind of get a gauge of their opinions and stuff. And from the upperclassmen, they said, honestly, it was so much BS as far as the players. He goes, half the players that left were really just looking for more playing time. He said, but the ones that were complaining, said for the most part, they were just not the guys that were, like, focused and dedicated. You know, he didn't want to say they were lazy, but basically what he was, you know, getting at. And he said most of the people that are there not really want to be there, and they're happy to be there. He goes, we were so happy that Harsin was retained. He goes, but that's the last thing in the world we wanted him to be gone. And the incoming freshmen, they talked very highly of Harsin, and they said they felt the same way. Like they felt like, man, he goes, we're so happy that he's back. You know, we like what he's trying to do. And they said the workouts were super hard, but they're definitely getting used to him. So
yeah, well, there's no doubt that the players on the roster that stayed, they've talked about his hard work ethic, and Harsin will tell you that too. Like, you're going to come into this program and you're going to work and work hard, but we're going to earn it and we're going to do this thing the right way. And I'm not saying the players that left didn't want that, but they obviously did not buy in to how Harsin wanted to run this program. So the things you're saying, I mean, I'm sure they're pretty legit, and that makes sense, because players leave for a reason, and a brand new head coach is obviously a big one.
Yeah. He just said Harsin is, you know, he's very disciplined and he's has a lot of expectations. And he said it's just, you know, he's just not going to put up with, you know, people just doing the wrong things. He's going to get on to you. And so, you know, so I felt good though with what he was telling me and the other guys. It sounded like all the new people, I think they know what they were getting into, and they are comfortable with that. So, you know, hopefully better days are ahead. But you know, as far as basketball tonight, obviously we needed Tennessee to beat Kentucky. And, you know, I'm glad they did. And it gives us a little bit of breathing room. But, I mean, we just need to take advantage of it. We don't need to look at it like, oh, we can lose the game. I think we need to just try to see if we can win out.
Right.
And, you know, if we lose one, we can still, you know, win the SEC. But just hopefully we can get on track shooting.
Yeah, Auburn's definitely got to shoot the ball better. I think there's no doubt about it. The last few games, they have not been shooting the ball well. I think tonight is a very good chance for Auburn to get back in the groove offensively and just as a whole. And you're right, Auburn they cannot just lay back and play these last six games. They got to go into it with the mentality to win every game so they can go and win an SEC title.
Yeah. All right. Hey, appreciate it, guys.
All right, thanks, Dan. That was Dan here on the line. Noah, he had a little take on some football with – the coaching change and the
mentality.
It's
definitely the dynamic that we heard when all that stuff was going down for a week and a half. It's definitely the dynamic of this coach caught in the middle of people that were bought in and people that were not, right? And, you know, ultimately, I think the people that you weigh, what they say a little bit more is the people that are still here. And I know it's easy to look at the 20 players that are not, but I also don't think you should weigh those more than the people that are still here, where you still have a lot of the program. Unfortunately, you lost a lot of depth. You lost a lot of underclassmen in that wave. And those were not guys that Brian Harsin recruited, though. Think about all the people that left. They were not Brian Harsin recruits. You know what I mean? So this is just, I think that's more of an indication of the culture swing. And then basketball, Bruce Pearl's talked about it. They are in a shooting funk. We have talked about it. Auburn right now has had some dry spells. I don't want them to stop shooting the basketball. I want them to keep shooting the basketball. I just want them to make them. And that's what Bruce Pearl said, and I completely agree with that. Now, I would like to see better shot selection. I don't love logo threes. I don't love contested mid-range jumpers, even if you are the future number one overall draft pick. And I know that's what the offense is oriented to get Jabari Smith. But I would like to see Auburn work to get better shots than what they are. But ultimately, they are still missing a lot of freebies. They are missing a lot of open ones, and they're leaving a lot of points on the scoreboard. When will that break through? I think they've got the. That extra notch that they can get to from a shooting perspective, because we've seen it already. They just better get to it pretty quick, or else somebody's going to upset them. Not tonight, but someone on the road.
No, I think, and I said it yesterday, and I've been saying it. I think this stretch of a week and a half to 2 weeks for Auburn is going to be really good. The schedule has changed from the Saturday to Tuesday games. Now they play Saturday, then they play Wednesday, and then on Saturday again. I think spacing it out a couple days, we've heard Bruce Pearl talk about this team just needs some rest. They've been worked like dogs, you know, just with all these tough games in the SEC. And I think tonight against a outmanned, outmatched Vanderbilt, I think is a fantastic game for Auburn basketball to get back in the groove, get back to shooting the basketball better, playing efficient basketball for 40 minutes, I think. And then on the road at Florida, I think this is a great opportunity for Auburn to do that.
I think Florida's the game that I'm looking at, because Auburn shoots well at home. That's never the problem, really. I know they didn't this past Saturday, but they still win by 18 at home, right? I got to see them do something on the road that's significant. So the Florida game's the one that I'm pointing to on Saturday at Exact Tech Arena and Stephen C. O'Connell Center.
That's right.
That's a mouthful.
That's right. Let's take a break. We'll have Justin Ferguson here on the show when we come back. You're listening to On the Line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today here on the Wednesday edition of the show. Good show so far. We've talked about some Auburn football, Auburn basketball, but now we're going to head to the phones. We have Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer here on the show. Justin, welcome in.
Hey, man. How are y'all?
Doing good. Doing good. So we want to talk to you first about, of course, Auburn basketball has a game tonight at home against Vanderbilt, a Vanderbilt team that is, you could say, is outmatched against Auburn, but what is your initial scouting report on this Commodores team tonight?
Well, they've got one of the best players in the SEC, if not the best scoring weapon in the SEC by average this year, in Scottie Pippen Jr., a guy that does a really good job of getting downhill, finishing around the rim. He's just a really talented, really skilled player that I think some people are surprised that he's still at Vanderbilt, because he's got such NBA draft potential surrounding him. But he was a preseason conference player of the year. He's lived up to the hype again this season, and plays on a team that, offensively is pretty strong. They've got a pretty good best three-point shooting team in the league right now. They got the best three-point defense in the league. So this is going to have to be a game, I think, where Auburn tries to use their size advantage, with Walker Kessler and Jabari Smith, open things up. But, you know, this Vanderbilt team is fully capable of getting hot from deep. They do a good job of extending their defense out and hurting teams on the perimeter. This should be a game where Auburn takes care of business, particularly in the form of the fact that Vanderbilt is a team that gets blocked probably more than any other team in the SEC this season. So it should be a big game for Kessler and Jabari Smith in that regard, and Auburn's rim protection. That'll be a good part of the matchup, especially when you face Pippen. But it's just going to come down to if Vanderbilt can hit shots from the outside, get hot from deep, keep them in the game, that'd be big. And we all know that Auburn is currently struggling from behind the arc. So it'll be an interesting matchup. Auburn can't take Vandy lightly by any means. It's a team that's got a couple of really good wins on their schedule and some really close, hard-fought losses. So, and Jerry Stackhouse is a really good coach, especially with how he gets his offense together.
talking with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. Of course, Bruce Pearl alluded to this when he spoke with the media earlier this week, talking about how Auburn is struggling to shoot the basketball. Of course, Auburn's been better at home, but they didn't have a great performance this past weekend. How does this team break out of this slump, and do you foresee them breaking out of this slump?
Yeah, probably not tonight, even though if they can get out of the slump tonight, that would be great, just because Vanderbilt's got a really good three-point defense. But yeah, there's really not a rhyme or reason for why Auburn is shooting poorly, from beyond the arc right now. It's pretty much everybody is taking kind of a nosedive since that Missouri game in their three-point percentage. The volume hasn't changed. The shots on the floor haven't changed. The usage really hasn't changed either. It's just, Auburn all across the board has just taken a step back in three-point shooting. So, it's such an outlier. If you look at the rest of the season, Auburn's been, kind of an average three-point shooting team. It's just about just everybody kind of getting back into it. And I think they need one or two guys to just, get out of their slumps, and good shooting can be contagious. Just like bad shooting can be contagious. So, it might not happen tonight just because of the way Vanderbilt defends the three-point line. But they've got a few weeks to get going. This Auburn team is plenty capable of putting up a ton of points on the boards, one of the best offenses in college basketball without being a great three-point shooting team. But if they can just get back to being, just an average team from beyond the arc with what they've got down low, it's a team that can make a deep run in the NCAA tournament. So they've got time to work out the bugs, and maybe it could happen tonight, because we've seen Auburn struggle to shoot against bad defenses, and we've seen them have pretty good shooting performances against really good defenses, kind of like Kentucky before the slump started. So, it's going to be interesting to see how they attack that tonight.
Justin, when we talk about this so-called slump that Auburn basketball has been in the last few games, you mentioned the height advantage and the blocking advantage for Auburn tonight against Vanderbilt, but who's a player that you are looking for specifically to just get back in the groove and get on a roll against Vanderbilt tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see if Jabari Smith can get it going from beyond the arc again, or just his shot. He's been a pretty good player. He's been a pretty good weapon recently for Auburn, obviously. He's the best player on the floor every time he steps onto it in terms of pure talent. But his shot has not been as effective. His jump shot hasn't been quite as effective as it has been, earlier in the year. He's had a few games where it's kind of been hit or miss. It hasn't been quite the same consistent offensive weapon. Now, he's continuing to be a great rebounder, a great defender, and I think his passing is also getting really really strong as well. So he's been able to impact the game in a lot of ways without necessarily being the same lights out shooter, but you look at Vanderbilt and you look at their size. I mean, it's just there's just not very many teams in the country that can compete with a 6'10" power forward and a 7'1" center in terms of size. So I think this is a matchup where, where it's a Vanderbilt team, a little more drive heavy, a little more guard heavy. Do they have anybody who can slow down Jabari Smith? So back at home, might not necessarily be from the 3-point line, but wouldn't be surprised if he has a night where you look at him and say, okay, his efficiency is back up. He's kind of having one of those big games that we know he's capable of having, because every time this season he's had kind of an off night shooting, the next time out he comes out with a big one, and that should kind of line it up for this one.
This year, college basketball seems to be pretty wide open at the top. Nobody has really set themselves aside as a clear runaway favorite like maybe a Gonzaga and a Baylor did on a collision course last year. Who are some teams maybe outside the top five right now, inside the AP top 25 rankings, that maybe you could see making it to a Final Four or a national championship?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's definitely a case where you have to look at a team like Duke, just because of the pure star power they've got at their disposal. They blew a big lead last night to Wake and almost lost on what would have been a wild shot. But, Paolo Banchero and Mark Williams, those guys, when they get going, can really take over a game. I'm really interested in seeing like what a team like Villanova can do, just because they have that championship pedigree under J.A. Wright. They shoot the ball exceptionally well from deep. They're coming off of a pretty big win against against Providence last night, and it was a pretty high-scoring game between those two teams. And, you know, I think Villanova, you know, the numbers, the analytics like them more than maybe the polls do at this point. So I'm keeping an eye on them. And it's just, don't really feel that I have a lot of confidence in Baylor just because of the injuries that they've had. So, I mean, if you're looking for somebody kind of lower down the board that would make sense to make a run in March, it's, I guess you'd have to go right back to UCLA again, just because of the talent level they've got at their disposal. I know it hasn't really clicked, you know, lately. They've lost three out of the last four, but they can get back on track. I mean, Juzang, Tiger Campbell, some of those guys that are fully capable of taking over a basketball game, and they made such a great run last season, in the tournament. I would imagine UCLA would be a team that everybody needs to watch out for.
Likewise, and I know we don't have a bracket yet, but this leads me into my follow-up question. Which teams right now in the national scope do you think pose the biggest threats to Auburn based off of play style, talent, roster structure, whoever that may be?
Yeah, there's two teams that jump out to me the most, and one of them is very obvious. It's Gonzaga. When you think about, okay, who has the front court to compete with Auburn's front court, it's definitely Drew Timme and Chet Holmgren. I think Jabari Smith and Walker Kessler versus Drew Timme and Chet Holmgren would be a phenomenal matchup. You're talking about just elite players in the front court. Gonzaga is on a roll right now, and they've played at a really high level most of the season. They're going to hit the NCAA tournament on a hot streak. They went deep in the tournament last year, so you know that's a matchup that I think you might not get it until a national title game or a Final Four. But that would be just one of the best possible games you can see all year, and it makes sense. These two teams have basically been number one, number two for most of the last couple months. So. And then the other team I'm just continuing to be intrigued by, and I know they have not, they haven't lit up the record books or anything like that this year, and they've had a couple of tough losses here recently, but Purdue stands out to me. They are one of the best three-point shooting teams in the country by in terms of efficiency. Got a phenomenal offense. Defensively, they're not quite as strong as some of these other contenders. But if you look at Purdue, man, they've got a ton of height, with Trevion Williams and Zach Edey at 7'4", and Jaden Ivey's is a really good wing player for them that can make some big shots. So that Purdue offense is that Purdue offense with their height and their inside out ability against an Auburn defense that I think when they're locked in is better than anybody in the country. That would be a really fun matchup as well.
Talking to Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. Justin, let's change our talking points to the football program for just a few minutes before we let you get out of here. Now that everything is sort of behind this football program with the Brian Harsin situation and coaching changes, what is your final thought on everything that happened in the past 2 weeks, and where does Auburn football stand as of right now?
Yeah, I think what happened the last 2 weeks has done nothing but, make the job tougher for Brian Harsin. Look, the situation was Auburn investigated Brian Harsin for some things they had heard about how he's running his program, wanted to kind of make a deeper, like an HR investigation. They didn't find anything, and they're going to move forward. The problem is that this news got out, and it leaked to the point where it created this pretty big firestorm, and some of that was of Auburn's own making. When you see how kind of the administration and university handled it, it just makes this job a whole lot tougher for Brian Harsin, because you have to recruit. You have to step up in recruiting, not only in this 2023 class, but in the transfer portal after spring ball. It's going to have to be a big priority for them. And it's just, you kind of took some of the wind, if not a lot of it, out of your sails, just because it's painted a really dysfunctional picture. I think internally, there's a lot of belief among the players and the coaches that they can band together and, they can prove a lot of people wrong this year. And, Harsin's got a lot of support and the plan that they're in, on the track that they're on, they think that they can win here. And that's what you actually have to have. You got to have that, internal belief, because if you don't have that, then you definitely aren't going to pull anything off. Yeah, it's just a tougher – it was just a really, really tough time, and it was of Auburn's own making. So, you know, I'm just interested in seeing how Auburn addresses some of the roster issues that they've got in the short term, how they try to recruit, for the long term, with what has happened here in the last couple of weeks. But I don't expect anything different from the team itself and the staff itself. It's just, hey, banding together and continuing to stick to the plan, and they think they can take a step forward in year two. So it's going to be an unpredictable time, but I think a lot of the, what I think this is going to be the big question is, can you get your roster in the point where you need it to be after you've had all this stuff come against you?
Last question to you before we let you get out of here. Speaking with Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer, this is something that we just brought up earlier, but JT Daniels is still in the transfer portal. How realistic could it be that he can make a 3-hour move to the Plains?
I would just be interested to see how Auburn would view him because they already have 5 quarterbacks on the roster. I mean, I guess it's going to have to come from, what happens in spring practice, right? If they get through spring practice and they don't have 5 anymore, or they go through spring practice and they're like, we could use somebody else in there. I wouldn't be surprised to see Auburn try to go after it. But, they've already gotten 2 transfer quarterbacks. They've got a couple of freshmen here. They've got a returning guy in TJ Finley that, ended last season as a starter. So it's already a crowded room. And so I don't think that really makes it, easy for Daniels to want to knock down the door to come to Auburn. But, if something changes over these next couple of months and they get out of spring practice and they think, okay, we think that he might be the missing piece, maybe they go after it. But I just think it would have to come with some movement and a lot of revelation from spring ball.
Justin, we appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today. Tell everybody where they can find all your great content.
Yeah, sign up at auburnobserver.com, $6 a month or $60 a year. Get you access to everything we got going on. A lot of basketball right now, a couple podcasts as well. Have some stories up on the Brian Harsin situation from over the weekend that you can all check out at auburnobserver.com. And like I said, sign up for $6 a month or $60 a year. Everything we do gets sent straight to your email inbox.
Justin, we appreciate it, my man. I hope you have a great rest of your afternoon and week.
Yeah, y'all too. Thank you.
That was Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer here with us on the Wednesday edition of On the Line. We come back to wrap up hour number one on the other side of this break.
Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you here on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just a few minutes left in hour number one. We just talked to Justin Ferguson of the Auburn Observer. If you've missed any of the first hour of the show, just search On the Line wherever you get your podcasts. So now I want to talk about some college basketball from last night, because there were some big games, Noah, that happened last night. A lot of tournament implications with some SEC games, and then some other conference games. But first, let's start with the SEC, and the big one, of course. Kentucky and Tennessee played in Knoxville, and Tennessee, they handled business against the Wildcats.
What are you talking about? That game didn't count. Ty Washington got hurt. They weren't fully healthy.
Oh, snap.
That game didn't count.
Tennessee, they played good ball, and they played good ball all 40 minutes, and they showed a way to beat Kentucky and to slow down Oscar Tshiebwe. I won't say completely stop, because he still had a double-double, but they at least showed how to slow him down at what maybe affects him more than other things. I think length and height really bother Oscar Tshiebwe.
I think, and I'm not discounting what you're saying right now, but a lot's going to be made out of this result, and this is a lot of credit to Tennessee and what they did. They were on their home floor, though. It was a crazy environment. I'm not making excuses, but this is the nature of college basketball. Auburn experienced it last Tuesday. Kentucky experienced it. To believe that Kentucky was not going to lose again would mean that they were SEC champions, that they would be national champions, right? Like, losses come in basketball. And we were talking about last night being probably the last major opportunity for them to lose, even with their upcoming schedule against some tough teams. But I also think those teams don't match up well with Kentucky. I was shocked by Tennessee's front court and how they were able to handle Oscar Tshiebwe because I didn't think that was going to be possible. I said that at the end of the show yesterday. I was also shocked at how ineffective Kentucky's backcourt was compared to Tennessee's. Kennedy Chandler, Zakai Zingler, he had a great game. Both of those guys had great games. I don't know why I just said one. Both of those guys had great games. You know, Killen Grady was an afterthought in the first half, and there was a run that got Tennessee up 32-17 with a little bit beyond midway point of the first half, and at that point it was over. Kentucky never was able to gain any of that ground back. I was impressed by what Tennessee did, but I'm also not going to say that Tennessee is the better basketball team because of last night. Kentucky beat that team by 40 the first time. And granted, this Tennessee team is a lot better than they were back then. And I think this says a lot about how far Tennessee has come. They are a legitimate Sweet 16, potential Elite 8 team when it's all said and done. But I'm not going to overreact to last night's results and say, oh, Kentucky's falling apart. They're not as good as we thought they were as far as being a top five team. I still think they can be that caliber. But it's definitely breathing room for Auburn.
Exactly. The point I was going to bring up was since Kentucky lost that game last night, if Auburn takes care of business tonight against Vanderbilt, they will regain that two-game lead in the SEC, a two-game lead in the conference with five games to play. That's a good spot for Auburn to be in, especially with their upcoming schedule, which have all winnable games besides the Tennessee game on the road, which not saying Auburn can't win that, but you see what Kentucky just did on the road to Tennessee. So Auburn at a good spot with Kentucky losing last night.
That's right, and this allows Auburn to play looser. This allows Auburn to not play. I was talking about pressure yesterday and how losing when they were number one kind of took that pressure off of them, but there was still the pressure of having to hold on to the regular season championship. Now I'm wondering if this is going to help Auburn get out of their funk, if now there's no one breathing down their neck anymore. Of course, two games isn't a lot, and Auburn still has to win tonight. But, you know, assuming Auburn wins tonight and they've got that two-game lead, tonight could be the game where they break out of their funk and they gain their footing again and they start playing like they were when they were on their 19-game winning streak. I wouldn't be shocked if that team, if Kentucky losing last night kind of spurs Auburn on to a strong finish in the regular season, because there isn't that pressure, or at least not as much pressure as you had. You can take a loss, which is going to make you more – it's going to make you play – looser, which is going to help you in turn not take another loss.
And I like the point you made earlier that the Florida game may be on Saturday when Auburn travels to Gainesville. That may be the game that Auburn finally kicks it back into gear. And that's kind of what Justin Ferguson was saying in our last segment. He said he doesn't see it happening tonight, but maybe this could be the kickstarter to that. And I think if Auburn can win a good game tonight and then go to Gainesville on Saturday and really kick it into high gear and just put it on the Gators, I think this Auburn team will start rolling through the last four or five games of the season. And one more game I wanted to point out before we head to the commercial break is Villanova and Providence, man, in the Big East, number 10, number 8. Villanova, they've got it done on the road with a 5-point win. Your formula went 1-1 last night, my friend.
4-1 total, though, on the year. 4-1.
Oh, that's solid. I wasn't hating. But Villanova, they're getting good at the right time. Watch out for the Big East.
You are on the line, live on ESPN, 106.7 in Auburn and Fox Sports Central Alabama on 98.3 FM in Birmingham and Sylacauga. Online on foxsports983.com and ESPNAU.com. Call in at 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502.
You're listening to On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Wednesday edition of the show. Give us a call, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. We want to hear from you, whether it's Auburn football, Auburn basketball's game tonight against Vanderbilt, anything else you want to talk about in the sports world, give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390 or toll free at 888-382-7502. 382-7502. If you missed the first hour, just look up On the Line wherever you get your podcast. It goes up every day right after the show. Let's start off hour number two with making headlines.
making headlines.
So first off, starting making headlines, as we started the show with the so-called rumors of Auburn's defensive tackle, Colby Wooden, possibly leaving Auburn. What do we know with this situation, Noah?
Of course, there's been a couple of reporters that have come out in the last 24 hours to say that he is going to stay, which was Justin Hogenson of On3, as well as Philip Dukes, who is a contributor to 24/7 Sports. Those couple of guys saying that he is going to stick around. Of course, there was just kind of rumblings, just kind of whispers of it. You heard that maybe he could. I've been hearing that for a couple of days, but didn't say anything about it because there was no reason to,
right? We didn't know.
And now that there's been some reporters to actually say that he's going to be sticking around, I think you could say this is another win for Brian Harsin since all of this stuff settled down from a week ago, maybe even three W's in a row for him now. A, that he kept his job, stuck to his guns, still with the program. And if he wins, that could mean a change in alignment inside the football program. B, he's able to keep Zach Etheridge from going to Georgia, which was rumored. And then C, he's able to keep potentially his best football player on the entire team. Now, I don't want to take that away from Tank, so I'll definitely say he's the best defensive player, I believe. I think him and Derek Hall are by far the two best players. Well, then there's Owen Papo. You forget about Owen Papo because he's been injured so much. But as far as guys that were major contributors a year ago, Colby Wooden was the best one returning aside from Owen Papo. But once again, I go back to major contributors, and Owen Papo just didn't play enough for me to put him in that category. But you've got some real talent on the defensive side of the football. So there's a lot of different angles to look at this from. A, it's Brian Harsin getting guys to buy in. It's B, you've got another team leader back. It's C, you've got so much talent on the defensive side of the football for the 2022 football season. And you're going to need that defense to be firing on all the cylinders from the get-go, because it's going to take some time, I think, to bring the offense along with some of the new faces. Of course, the offensive line, I think, is going to gel from a chemistry standpoint. Hopefully, the running game is improved. You're not playing the toughest competition from a run-stopping perspective in the first three games because you're playing Mercer, San Jose State, and Missouri. You're not, or no, it'd be Penn State game three. Penn State's not a bad run defense. We don't know what they're going to look like in 2022. Of course, there's a lot of turnover in college football. I don't think that was one of the best defenses in college football, but they were pretty good last year, and they obviously had some success against Auburn's running game in Happy Valley last year. But regardless, the first two games, it's going to be a lot of what we saw last year in the first two games against Akron and Alabama State. You're going to see that again against Mercer and San Jose State. And then the question is, can you actually run the football? So we'll find out week three. You know, the schedule shapes up a lot like it did last year. We're not going to really know a whole bunch until week three. And funny enough, we all thought Auburn was a pretty good football team after week three this past year. And I think the same will be said about this football team after week three. It just comes down to them winning the two games after Penn State. Whether or not they lose to Penn State, that's not as important to me as them winning the two games following it. If you beat Penn State but lose one of those two games following it, Missouri and LSU, the Penn State win doesn't mean as much to me, because you needed those two teams after it are not as good of football teams, I don't think, as Penn State is coming to town.
And I agree. I think
could be wrong, but
I agree. I think I would rather Auburn beat Missouri and LSU rather than beat Penn State if they had to choose. I would rather Auburn win their SEC games and lose that one out-of-conference game. But we're on this discussion, of course, because of the rumors of Colby Wooden, the defensive tackle for Auburn, possibly leaving Auburn, but reports have come out to say he is staying with the Tigers. And I think it's important to note here that there were no legitimate reports that he was leaving Auburn or wanted to leave Auburn. Now, as the saying goes, where there's smoke, there's fire. Was he considering it? Yeah, maybe. And he may have been thinking about and possibly mentioned to somebody, hey, maybe I'll leave Auburn, but maybe I'm going to stay. But no, not having any actual reports for Colby Wooden wanting to leave Auburn, I think is a big point to make on this whole situation. But now reports coming out saying that he is staying, like you mentioned, it's a huge W for Brian Harsin and this Auburn football team. Of course, tonight, Auburn basketball, the number two team in the country, hosts Vanderbilt tonight at 8 o'clock on SEC Network, 8 o'clock Central Time on SEC Network. We've talked a little bit about the matchup tonight for Auburn against Vanderbilt and their upcoming games coming down the stretch. But Noah, what are you looking for specifically in this Auburn-Vanderbilt game tonight?
Scottie Pippen Jr. concerns me if Auburn's not shooting the basketball well. Now, if this was in Memorial Gymnasium at Vanderbilt, I would be worried about tonight. I would be. Vanderbilt's got the stuff, has got the roster makeup, has got the talent on the roster this year with Scottie Pippen to upset some teams. Now, have they done that yet in conference play? No, but they have definitely pushed some teams to the brink. And they did beat LSU nearly by double digits a couple of weekends ago. So, and LSU, of course, was reeling at that point and were on a bit of a slide. But I'm just saying, there is some ability there where if you're not shooting the basketball well and Scottie Pippen gets going and he can get his teammates involved because he is a distributor of the basketball as well, that's where you got some concern. But here's the reality. Auburn's playing at home tonight. It's not in Memorial Gymnasium, Memorial Coliseum, or whatever it is. I think it's Memorial Gymnasium. It's not at Vanderbilt tonight. It's at home. Auburn typically wins games like this year at home by like 18 points. And so I think Auburn's going to – Auburn's talent, what comes down to, and you asked me what I'm looking for, what comes down to is, does Auburn look good tonight? Or is it just Auburn's talent overpowering somebody again? Is Auburn's athleticism overpowering somebody again? Eventually, Auburn's not going to be able to dunk their way to a win, right? There was a stretch of time in the game on Saturday where Auburn was just dunk, 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 lob, dunk. You know, it was just – there was a sheer brute force that Auburn was putting upon their opposition to be able to help them win the basketball game. Eventually, you're not going to be able to do that. And so I'm just waiting to see when Auburn finally breaks out and actually looks good in one of these basketball games. And for the time being right now, you know, can you really take a whole lot out of if Auburn does look good tonight? Of course, we'll come back on tomorrow's show and we'll say, yeah, Auburn looked great last night. That's a great sign for the team. But I will also add to it, I would like to see Auburn look like that on the road.
And if you look at the spread right now for Auburn and Vanderbilt tonight, Auburn's a 13.5-point favorite.
Cover.
At home. I would expect them to cover that to win by 14 or more points.
But a backdoor cover for Vanderbilt could make you grit your teeth because of Scottie Pippen.
Especially. And also if Auburn gets up by 20 or 25 on this Vanderbilt team, Auburn puts the bench in, there could very easily be a backdoor cover here for Vanderbilt.
Also, look at Vanderbilt's schedule in recent weeks, and let's try and go and see if we can find someone that has beaten them by 14 points. You said the line's at 13.5, right?
13.5.
All right. On the road in Knoxville, they lost by 11. Of course, they won their two games prior to that against Missouri and LSU. They only lost by 7 in Rupp. They were on the road at Kentucky, only lost by 7 in Rupp. Then they beat Georgia before that. Lost to South Carolina by 9. The last time that they lost by 14 points or more was all the way back on January 22nd when they were on the road at Florida and lost 61-42. I'm trying to see if I can find another game where they lost by 14 or more, though. Right now, let's see. Florida's the only one I'm seeing up to this point on their entire schedule.
That's pretty impressive.
Where Vanderbilt lost by 14 or more, and it was back on January 22nd. Yeah, that's it. Vanderbilt's only lost one time this year by 14 or more, and that was against Florida, where they lost by 19.
That's interesting, because if you look at the implied final score with – I'm on the Yahoo Sports app.
So maybe Auburn doesn't cover tonight.
They might not.
I said that because Auburn typically – but you look at Auburn's schedule at home, they're typically beating opponents by more than 14. So there's some tension there when you're looking at this line. Beware.
Right. And so I'm using the Yahoo Sports app, and it's really awesome because they give you the odds. And with the spread and the over-under and all that kind of stuff, they give you what the implied final score would be. It would be 78.5-65 in favor of Auburn. So if they win – they're saying Auburn's going to win this thing 79-65. I find it hard to believe that Vanderbilt's only going to score 65 points. But what I'm looking for in this game, the question that I asked you for the Auburn-Vanderbilt game tonight, what I'm looking for, and it goes along with your point of Auburn looking good, not just winning and out-talenting the other team, I look for Auburn's offense to be efficient in the half court, because that's something we have not seen very much of from this Auburn basketball team all season long, or even under Bruce Pearl a lot of times, is the half-court offensive efficiency for Auburn basketball. Of course, we've seen in the past teams that like to get out and run and shoot three-pointers, but that's not normal for most basketball teams to live and die by a three and do it as successfully as Auburn has done in the past. So tonight, and even in the next couple of games before Auburn heads to the SEC tournament, I look for this team to just run some efficient, quality half-court offense, run some set plays, move the ball around the perimeter, maybe work from the inside out. That's my favorite thing to do in basketball. Give the ball to your playmaker like a Jabari Smith on the inside, and then let him make the decision whether he's going to drive and go to the basket, or he's going to shoot that mid-range jumper, or he's going to pass it out for an open three for KD Johnson or Wendell Green or Jalen Williams and Devin Cambridge off the bench. I like all of that, and I want to see some more of that from Auburn, and not just Wendell Green with a pick and roll for Walker Kessler, because teams have showed that they can defend that a little bit now, and I called them out for not doing so a couple weeks ago, but now they've started to do it. So that's what I'm looking for tonight, is Auburn to run efficient half-court offense, run some plays, move the basketball, and not take logo threes all the time, and just efficient offense. That's what I'm looking for tonight.
Let's move to our next headline. Number 16, Tennessee, last night defeated number 4, Kentucky, 76-63. You asked my thoughts on this back at the end of hour number 1. What were your thoughts on the performance last night by the Vols, or the performance last night by the Kitty Cats?
Oh. No, I think it's extremely impressive for Tennessee. I think it's a good win. Is it the end-all, be-all? Kentucky's a fraud? No. But Tennessee showed that they can go in and win a big basketball game against a very good Kentucky team who, for the last week and a half, 2 weeks, showed to be almost unbeatable. They've been putting teams down and playing extremely good basketball, got all the way to number 4 team in the country, as they still are right now, of course. But I think it's extremely impressive on Tennessee's part. They beat Kentucky by double digits. Now, yes, it was on their home floor. It was in Knoxville, Tennessee. I get all that. But they showed that Oscar Tshiebwe can be slowed down, not completely stopped. He still had 13 points and 15 boards. But Tennessee showed that they can run with teams in the SEC like Kentucky. And we're about to see what they can do against Auburn in Knoxville next Saturday. I'll be there at that game. So hopefully Auburn can do what they got to do. But I think it's a very impressive win for Tennessee. But Kentucky's going to be just fine. And of course, the joke is flying around Twitter that it doesn't count because of Ty Washington getting hurt. But man, what game does he not get hurt in? And you feel bad for the dude because he can play extremely good basketball and can be a huge leader on that basketball team. But the dude can't stay healthy. And I hate that because you see that in sports all the time. But you hate to see it for Kentucky and Ty Washington because the guy can play, man. He can play some basketball. But Kentucky's going to have to figure out a way, whether he's in the game or not, they're going to figure out how to win without him, because I feel like down the stretch they're going to be without him a lot more than they're going to be with him.
I don't think the Kentucky backcourt's good enough for them to win a national championship. Now, they've got some good players, but I just think they've had the tendency to disappear in some games, to not have the scoring ability with consistency to help lift them to where they want to be at college basketball's end. I think this is a team that's going to ruin someone's season. It's going to mess something up for somebody.
Maybe they can make a run.
Maybe can make a Final Four. I don't think it's considered a run for them at this point. I know for everybody, maybe it's a run that they made it to the Final Four of the championship, but when you're where they're at in the top 25, it's not a run. They should go that far, right? Maybe a run to the championship, maybe, but they are one of the 4 best teams in the country according to the AP Top 25 poll. It won't be that way after this week or anything like that, but there's things about this team from the backcourt perspective that they got great wings. They have a great front court. Obviously, you got Oscar Tshiebwe. They've got those things down pat. It's the backcourt that concerns me if they're going to cost them a game at some point down the line.
I think in the NCAA tournament, when you go and win 4 or 5 games in a row, because you got to win 6 in a row to win it all in the NCAA tournament. I think if you win 4 or 5, you're on a run. I don't care if you're if you're on the 16 seed or you're the 1 seed, the number 1 overall seed. I think, and not coming at you, I'm just saying, I think in general in the NCAA tournament, when you win 4 or 5 in a row and you're in the Elite Eight or the Final Four, you're making a run. And whether you're supposed to do that or not, I still think you're making a run. But I agree with you, man. I think Kentucky is going to beat some teams in the NCAA tournament by sheer talent and, of course, good coaching and good play, but I don't see this team winning the national title, and I don't see them making the Final Four. I see them losing a tough game, maybe in the Elite Eight, possibly an upset in the Sweet 16, but I think Oscar Tshiebwe is going to be an outmatch for other teams and other players on teams early on in the NCAA tournament. But no, I agree. I don't see Kentucky making the Final Four. Now, we could be wrong in the next month, but and same thing goes for Tennessee. I see them making maybe a Sweet 16, coming up with an upset to get to an Elite Eight, maybe. But Both of those teams are good. I don't think either one of them win the SEC. I don't think they win the SEC tournament. One of them will be in the SEC championship game, but I don't see either one of them making a legitimate push for a national title.
Last headline here, Cincinnati Bengals extend head coach Zach Taylor through 2026 as we move to the NFL. What are you laughing about?
Nothing, man. I ain't laughing.
What are you laughing about?
You skipped over my...
I did.
You skipped over my Olympics. I put it on there for a reason, see if you'd go for it. It's a big deal, I think.
This was a social experiment? That's what that was?
Yep, I did it. I caught you, man.
All right, we'll talk about it then.
The U.S. women's hockey team is in the gold medal match against Canada tonight. Two of the best hockey teams in the world. They're here every year. The men's team already got knocked out, but the women's team is up against Canada tonight in the gold medal match. It's at like 10:30 Central Time. I know many people aren't going to care, but I think it's a big deal. So I wanted to put it in there.
Tell people why it's a big deal.
Well, I think the Olympics is extremely important because it's the best of the best. You're representing the United States. And this women's team historically is one of the best hockey teams to ever, you know, the U.S. women's hockey team is historically a dominant force in the Olympics. They always end up matching with Canada. And the women's is just as good as the men's. And I know it may be hard to believe because, you know, it's a weird thing to think about, but women's hockey is legit, man. I mean, these girls are playing extremely hard. I wouldn't mess with them. And I think it's important because you're representing the United States. You're up against Canada, the biggest rival. This is a huge rivalry in the world of sports and in the Olympics, the U.S. women's hockey team facing Canada. So
let me tell you what's important tonight. Gonzaga, number one team in the country.
Shut up.
Pepperdine. 30.5-point favorites on the road at their next high school gymnasium.
Yeah, I was about to say, how much does that gym hold? About 20 people? They got a concession stand.
It'll tell me on ESPN.
Their concession stand's a little white folding table.
Capacity, 3,104. I've probably been in some high school gyms that could get to that.
Wow. And I guarantee there will be like 2,000 people there.
It's in Malibu, California, Firestone Fieldhouse.
Wow. How many wins do they have? Like 7, is that right?
7, you are correct.
Wow. That's my problem with Gonzaga. That right there, man. That's my problem. Now, if they win it all, I'll shut up. But until they do, Gonzaga, you do not have my respect.
All right, last headline. Like I mentioned, Cincinnati Bengals extend head coach Zach Taylor through 2026. Mr. Ohio over here, what's up?
I mean, it's a good move. I mean, the dude made the Super Bowl. It's year two under Joe Burrow.
You got to get paid, right?
Got to get paid. He did what he had to do. Year two, got to get paid. You don't believe he will be there until 2026.
Yeah, I think, look, when we see these extensions, when does it actually ever work out to the end of the extension?
So very rarely.
I said this yesterday. I said it is more likely that the Bengals miss the playoffs next year, right? How did I phrase that? I said it's more likely that the Bengals miss the playoffs next year than win the division.
Yeah, I think that's what you said.
And look, just because they had this great year this year. Look, guys, they went 10-7. They lost to the Browns twice.
Man, you're dogging your own team, man.
That's a cell phone, but like, look, they weren't like spectacular. They just got hot at the end. They barely made it to the postseason, guys. It was that close.
But then they made a run.
But they did. But, like, that isn't truly,
I agree,
potentially who they are. And they still have to do – now, we could talk about this in August after they've made some roster moves in free agency.
And
they
draft.
Could have added some – yeah, right. They could have improved their offensive line. Guys on the roster develop. Joe Burrow's great, right? He is. And Ja'Marr Chase is phenomenal. Those things, they could fix their roster holes, right? And they could be around, but – everybody was talking about the Chiefs were going to be a dynasty. They won one Super Bowl. Got blown out in the other one. Didn't even make it this year.
It's hard to be a dynasty in the NFL. It's hard to be consistently good in the NFL.
Right.
Let's just be honest.
So I'm not. So forgive me if I'm not going to buy in on someone that went 10-7 as supposedly being the next dynasty. People love to fall in love. People like to fall in love with fads, right?
Yep.
And Joe Burrow could be a fad.
Ooh.
I'm not going to say that he's not going to be. Look, by fad, I mean as far as the caliber of winning, right? People are probably like, man, this guy said Joe Burrow's not going to be good. No, Joe Burrow is a good quarterback, okay? He is, and he can be a good quarterback, and he can have a great career, but I'm not just going to sit here and say, you know, oh, he made it to a Super Bowl. This guy, that's about to be a dynasty. He went 10-7 this year. He had his fair share of bad games. Everybody loved Carson Wentz with the Eagles when they were rolling, and guess what? He broke both of his feet this year, right?
So you're not jumping on the Joe Burrow hype train long term. And it's not a bad take, because we talked about it yesterday. The NFC North, excuse me, the AFC North is going to be extremely competitive over the next few years. And it's hard to be consistently good in the NFL unless you're Tom Brady.
I'm old enough to remember when Andrew Luck was going to be the next big thing. And
me
guess
too,
what?
Bro.
He kept getting like lacerated spleens and stuff, okay? Like, yeah. I remember
Baker
those
Mayfield's
days.
Next, man.
You know, it's already happened.
I
what
know.
You mean?
That's what I'm saying, man.
What you mean? It's already happened. It's already happened to Baker Mayfield. And so when I look at it, the NFL is so hard, and you got to keep your quarterbacks healthy. And I'm not saying he's going to get hurt or anything like that, but I'm just saying they got their issues too, and it may have just been something that just the stars aligned for Cincinnati. And let's just be real, it's the stars don't always align for Cincinnati, right?
I mean, you're right, man. Believe me, I lived up there for a long time. It took a long time for the Bengals and Cincinnati in general to be good. Let's take a break here on the line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today here on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just about 35 to 40 more minutes left of this edition. If you want to give us a call about anything we've talked about today, we've covered football, basketball, NFL. I talked about the Olympics a little
CD
bit.
CD players. I'm going to tell you, my mind was blown. You don't remember this, but when touchscreens came out.
Yeah. Yeah.
You've grown up with
it. We've talked about defibrillators. Is that or
No.
I tried, okay. Man. I tried. I said I wasn't gonna try.
Defibrillator.
Yeah, nah, I ain't believing that.
A phonics lesson on the show today.
If you want to tune in or call in and give us your opinion on anything we've talked about, and it's been a lot today, give us a call here on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll free at 888-382-7502. Just a few minutes here before we go to the network break. Noah. There's some other games tonight, excuse me, in the college basketball slate. Of course, Auburn plays tonight against Vanderbilt. Doesn't really have huge tournament implications because of Auburn's status and Vanderbilt's status, but there's a couple other games tonight that are really important and have huge implications on the NCAA tournament. What is one that stands out to you?
I'm going to start with the bubble. I'm going to talk about the bubble because I think that we're talking about teams' destinies here. We're talking about teams being able to be in the NCAA tournament picture. Rutgers has a nice resume when you compare them to some of the other bubble teams out there. And this is a team that's at 15-9. We were talking about them last week. Was this a team that was going to be able to survive their stretch of games upcoming? You know, they upset Michigan State. Everybody's head's turning a little bit. They blew them out by 21. They're like, they got to play Ohio State, Wisconsin, Illinois, and Purdue. And then, they just beat Ohio State by 2, and then, they just beat Wisconsin by 8. This is a team that is catching some fire right now. Will it run out? They're at home against number 12 Illinois tonight at 6 p.m. on Big Ten Network, and then they'll have Purdue after that on the road. They'll be on the road against Michigan, who's trying to get into the bubble, and then they'll have Wisconsin at home and Indiana on the road. So it does not get easier. The Big Ten is getting better at this stage in the season, and I think they're gaining more traction in the NCAA tournament picture in terms of being able to put teams in, and it's because of squads like Rutgers. Tonight, they're at home against Illinois. They've been playing their best basketball. Another win really puts this team over the top, but the unfortunate nature of it is there are still some must wins here because they're only 15-9, and if they lose the majority of their games remaining, they're not going to have an attractive enough record. They're not going to have an attractive enough conference record to get them into the NCAA tournament, but they are 9-5 in the Big Ten, a team that's going to be above 500 in conference play if they can achieve that and have 18-19 wins with the wins that they've got over teams like Purdue, Ohio State, Michigan State, and Wisconsin. That's going to get you in the dance.
You know what team is a little similar to this Rutgers team? Not as they're hot in the last week and a half or so.
Alabama.
Yep, Alabama sitting
Except
at 16-9.
They've got more respect because Alabama started in the top 25 and Rutgers didn't. See how rankings mess with stuff like that?
It shouldn't.
This is why one of my hot takes is that rankings shouldn't start until in any of the sports until like conference play gets going. But in college football, I think you could say week 7. I think you could go far.
So like the college football playoff rankings would be the first ranking, no AP poll.
Yes.
Something like that. I kind of agree.
But there's money wrapped up in that, so it's never going to happen.
Yeah,
but.
And same thing with college basketball. The non-conference slate doesn't matter.
Excuse your perception entirely, but I am going to give Alabama credit here. They deserve to be in the top 25. They've beaten three teams that were in the Final Four last year, so I don't want to take anything away from Alabama. I think Alabama at their best. Timing is everything with Alabama. Alabama at their best can beat anyone. Alabama at their worst can lose to anyone, too. So it just kind of, you got to weigh it as is. But I do think they're a tournament team.
And speaking of Alabama, that's the game that sticks out to me that's got some tournament implications tonight.
Especially for Mississippi State.
Especially for me and for Alabama, too. This is a game. So Mississippi State.
I think
State,
they're squarely in the tournament picture.
I don't know, man. If
they're a six seed, potential five seed in a lot of bracketologies, they are not in danger.
I think it can get ugly. In my opinion, I think it can. Mississippi State travels to Coleman Coliseum, airplane hangar, whatever you want to call it, to Alabama tonight. And I think this is a big game for both parties because Mississippi State, they've got to have a big win because they just don't really have any. They're 14-10. They've got to finish out strong with their schedule, and it starts tonight in Tuscaloosa with Alabama. And if you look at their remaining schedule, the only other ranked team they have is on the road at Auburn, and they're not going to win that basketball game. No, excuse me. That's at home at Auburn. Excuse me. That's at home against Auburn, but they're still not going to win that game. But other than that, they have Missouri twice, South Carolina, Vanderbilt, Texas A&M. Those are not good wins at all, even if you win them. And then on Alabama's side, I mean, Alabama cannot afford to lose a home game against Mississippi State tonight. I just think it looks bad for Alabama because
they've got so many great wins.
I think
the fact where they're at in bracketology tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, but here's the thing, man. This team they're good, but they're bad at the same time. So, like, if Alabama loses to Mississippi State tonight, then they're going to drop their game on Saturday because they play at Rupp, an angry Kentucky
team. Right, they're 16-11 at that point, but I don't see them losing after that. I think they beat Vanderbilt, South Carolina, Texas A&M, and LSU. And then they're 20-11, and they've got wins over, you know, they've got wins over three of the Final Four teams from a year ago. They'll have beaten Tennessee. That's an attractive win. They'll have already beaten LSU. I there's no way to me. Alabama at 500 in the SEC, they're making the tournament.
Fair enough. Well, after this break, we have the online Q&A, and we're going to dip into some SEC standings and the SEC tournament and its implications coming up here on the line. Welcome back into On the Line here on ESPN 106.7 in Fox Sports Central, Alabama. Jacob Goins, Noah Gardner with you today on the Wednesday edition of the show. Just 30 minutes left with you here on the show. We're going to get into our new made segment. Noah, you came up with this week, and I like it. Let's run with it. So we're going to get into the On the Line Q&A, and we're asking questions back and forth to each other, but we're also asking questions for the audience, and if the audience wants to call in and ask us questions, they can do so. Call in here to the show on the line, 334-321-1390, or toll-free at 888-382-7502. If you got any questions for us and you want us to answer them the best we can, give us a call. We want to hear from you. But Noah, let's start out between me and you with the on-the-line Q&A. Question number one I have for you, my friend. Can Auburn basketball afford to lose in the SEC tournament and still get a number one seed in the NCAA tournament?
Assuming that they went out in the regular season?
Yes.
Where do they lose in the SEC tournament? Have they won a couple of games in it? Let's say they lose the championship?
Let's say they lose the quarterfinal game.
No. They're probably not a one seed. But then again, like, this is so hard to predict.
Right. It's a loaded question.
Like, if Kentucky wins the SEC, wins the SEC tournament,
they'll get the one seed,
I would imagine, probably. And could you have two SEC teams? Sure. But imagine Duke wins out. Could they be a one seed? Yes. You got to look at the two line here. Duke is on the two line. Kansas is on the two line. They'll be throwing their name in there. Purdue, they've dropped to the two line. I mean,
that's a nasty two line.
I don't see Arizona and Gonzaga really falling apart. I mean, Arizona could take a loss or two at the end of their schedule that could see them. You know, the Pac-12 cannibalizes itself, too, a lot of years. Mm-hmm. They get into the conference tournament, and it ends up being somebody weird winning it or somebody takes an upset. They hurt themselves a lot. But I don't know. That's hard to predict because, like I said, it's wide open, and one more loss for Auburn to be a three-loss team. They should be a one seed, I think, but it could be enough to cost them. I don't know. I'll say, yeah, you know what? I'll say they're still get the one seed with one more loss. Now, quarterfinals, that definitely throws it into serious question. But, you know, if they win one or two games in the tournament and, you know, lose in the semis or the championship game, and they didn't lose out in the regular season, they won the conference regular season championship by two games, even if the SEC does get two one seeds, I still think it's possible.
I agree. I think if Auburn loses that quarterfinal game, that first game of the SEC tournament, they come out flat against a hot team, whoever it might be, and they lose that game, I could see Auburn falling to the two slot. But if Auburn loses the semifinal or the championship game in the SEC tournament after winning their final six games of the regular season, I don't see this team losing that number one seed. Not the overall seed, of course, but just a one seed in the NCAA tournament.
All right, second question. How important will the SEC tournament be for other teams in the SEC? So I'm going to let you take the floor because you are slowly but surely dwindling your field for the SEC every single time I talk to you about how many are going to make it in. But we've had some good discussions about SEC bracketology.
Here's my thing. I think the SEC tournament is going to be extremely important this season. One, for seeding of the teams, the guaranteed teams that are going to get in the SEC tournament, your Auburn, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Arkansas. Those four teams, I think, are solidified in the tournament 100%. But the SEC tournament itself will determine how those teams end up getting seeded in the NCAA tournament. But here's where this question comes from. A team like LSU, Alabama, Texas A&M, a possible Florida.
Let me amend this question for you then. I want to change this, right?
Okay.
Which is more likely to happen? The SEC right now, according to Joe Lunardi's bracketology, has six teams in the field, right? None of those teams have lower than a sixth seed in the tournament. You got LSU, you got Bama, and you got Arkansas all on the sixth line. Tennessee is a four seed according to this, and Auburn and Kentucky are one seeds right now.
This was as yesterday morning, by the way.
Right. Alabama's a five seed. Excuse me. Yes, and this is as of yesterday morning. You're right, at 7 a.m. Eastern time. Which is more likely, that the SEC sees somebody go on a slide and that they miss the tournament in what you predicted, five teams make the dance, or that someone gets hot and the SEC gets a seventh?
I think it's more likely, and I'm not just saying this because of that take early on, which I still stick by the way. I think it's more likely for a team to go on a slide here in the final five or six games of the SEC regular season and the SEC tournament.
Which team?
I really do think it could be LSU or Alabama. I think it could be one of those two teams. But here's the crazy thing about Alabama. They could get hot and win out the regular season, make a run in the SEC tournament, get a high seed in the NCAA tournament. That's totally possible. But I think if you look at Alabama and LSU, one of those two teams has the possibility to go on a slide and then lose that quarterfinal game on that Thursday afternoon in the SEC tournament and possibly miss out on the big dance as a whole. Look at LSU's schedule.
It's tough.
Now, their next two games aren't bad, Georgia, South Carolina, but they've got to play good ball because they lost to Vanderbilt and TCU, teams that are not that good when they were playing bad ball. But then they've got at Kentucky, at Arkansas, and home for Alabama. And if LSU loses those two games, or those three games, excuse me, that would put them at, what, 20-10 plus the Missouri game, which could be a toss-up depending on how it's played. So
that's still the way that the SEC is viewed. I don't see them being in danger. I think the worst seed that we could see for LSU is an 8 seed. I don't see them being worse than an 8 seed.
Yeah, but
in that scenario, a 20-10 LSU team's an 8 seed or maybe even a 7 seed.
Could be. But to answer your part of the question, I see a team going on a slump and losing out or something like that is more likely than one of those teams getting hot and pushing their seed line higher in the NCAA tournament.
And we've talked about Alabama and looking at how bracketologists are viewing Alabama. It's clear that they weigh the wins more than the losses. And Alabama's right now at, what, 16-9, fifth in the SEC. They're back at 500. I think over their last, let's see, six games, I would expect them, if they can keep playing the way that they are now, maybe they'll drop a game to somebody that they shouldn't. But so I'll say let's say they go 4-2 over their last six, lose to somebody they shouldn't, and Alabama finishes 20-11 in that scenario. And with the wins that they've got, they're in the same boat that LSU is in, where considering they're on the five line right now, I mean, that could drop to as far as an eight, but I just don't see it getting much worse than that for Alabama. I think Alabama has done enough at this point, barring colossal disaster, so a rock slide, okay, an avalanche for Alabama. I think both of those teams have done enough to make the tournament. So my answer is I think it is more likely that someone comes roaring in to give the SEC a seventh in the NCAA tournament. And we talked about a certain game yesterday, Texas A&M and Florida, and I said the winner of this game, they're keeping their NCAA tournament hopes alive. The other one is going to take a significant dent. Florida lost last night by 1 point.
Barn burner.
It was a rock fight. I don't know if I would even call it a barn burner. It was a rock fight.
It was ugly.
It was a bunch of people just throwing basketballs at each other. It was terrible. But Florida lost that game last night, and A&M won. Both teams now sit at 16-10. A&M's 5-8 in the league. Florida 6-7. But you look at remaining schedules for these two teams. Florida really doesn't have a lot of great wins, and you look at it down the stretch, they got to play Auburn, they got to play Arkansas, they got to play Kentucky. They've got two wins probably against Georgia and Vanderbilt, but I don't think you can say Vanderbilt on the road is without a doubt a win for this team. And with Florida right now being off the bubble as one of the teams on the outside looking in right now, according to Joe Lunardi, you add three more losses to this Florida team, you put them at 13 losses, and the best that they would be at, I think, 19 and 13 or 18 and 13, they would have to do some serious work in the SEC tournament. And I think they would be farther out than potentially what A&M can do with their schedule. And granted, people can say, well, A&M's 5-8 right now and hasn't beaten anybody, and that would be true. They're 0-4 against teams that were in the top 25 this year. They really don't have a great win on their schedule. They've played a lot of good teams close, only lost by 6 to Kentucky, only lost by 6 to LSU, only lost by 10 to Missouri, right? Tennessee, only lost by 8 to LSU again. But they play Vanderbilt, Georgia, Ole Miss, Alabama, and Mississippi State down the stretch, and say they go 4-1 against those teams and finish out 20-11 and win a game in the tournament, and they're 21-12 at the end of it. I could see, that would put A&M at 500 in SEC play, 9-9 overall in SEC play, 10-10 overall in SEC play if you count the tournament games. I think that gets you in with the way that the SEC is viewed this year. I think it's more likely that that happens than Alabama or LSU drops off, going back to the question that I asked you earlier. I think it's more likely that Florida or A&M find a way to squeak in than one of the teams that are currently in, with how entrenched they are with the wins that they have. I think it's more likely that somebody else goes in and gets the wins that they need to get in than one of these other teams experience a colossal disaster.
And everything you just said
makes sense.
And it very well could happen. And if it does happen, I'll be the first one to tell you, okay, I was wrong. And that's okay. But I figured out why I don't see those teams making the tournament. I figured it out, and I couldn't
figure out.
The great
epiphany, what is it?
The great epiphany is a team that is under 500, or even at, if you say at 500 in conference play, that's different. But if you're under 500 in conference play, what are you going to do in the NCAA tournament? If you can't even win in your own conference, what's going to make you win in the NCAA tournament? And I think when you look at it, the four teams that I have solidified 100%, no doubt about it, in the tournament right now.
But Oklahoma's an 11 seed, and they're like 14-12, dude.
I know, but that's what I'm saying. If you can't win it, and not just the SEC.
Those teams get in, though, because of the strength of the league.
I know, but I still think that you've got to be able to win in your own conference, because if you can't win your own conference.
Your problem is that they're in. What I'm saying is it's the reality that they are going to be in, whether you like it or not.
I know.
But I'm with you. I would like to see someone that maybe had a better record that's from the mid-major ranks, maybe makes it a little bit more interesting. But
there's 64 teams in the tournament, so they got to fill it with
68.
Somebody. 68, yep. Sorry. They got to fill it with somebody.
Like Rutgers right now is listed as next four out on the bubble. So they're not even, among the first four out. They're in the back of the plane, right? I think they should be in right now over Oklahoma with the wins that they have in Big Ten play. But just some of these conferences, there was preconceived perceptions of these leagues that are benefiting teams and not others.
Yeah, and I think that's just my biggest thing is I see it as, you've got to be at least 500 in your conference, in my opinion. Obviously, that's not how it works. But if it were up to me.
If you were the committee, judge, jury.
Yep, Judge Goins, that's right. I would want it to be where you've got to be good in your own conference. You can't be 5-8 in the SEC and then expect them to do anything in the NCAA tournament.
But I think A&M gets to 9-9. I think A&M gets to 9-9.
I think you're pushing on that one. It very well could happen, but I think there may be a little bit of a reach because I could see Texas A&M losing on that first day of the SEC tournament and not winning some of their final games down the stretch. I could see that with LSU.
And that would eliminate them. That would eliminate them from the NCAA tournament picture.
And I could see that with LSU. I could see it with Alabama.
But so let me show you what's so ridiculous about what we're talking about here, though. Wait, let's take Florida for instance, right, and compare them to Texas A&M. Florida right now is currently listed as first four out. Now, they're going to be gone when Joe Lenardi updates his bracketology. They're not going to be in this list. Somebody else, some new team is going to be on the bubble line, right? Rutgers will probably hop up to the first four out, or Virginia Tech or Kansas State. They've
Virginia
had some wins.
Tech.
You know, Kansas State's like three games above 500 right now, okay? And A&M 16-10, right? And so we're talking about this, but let's talk about Florida for an instance. Texas A&M just beat Florida, okay? And granted, Florida does have a better conference record right now than A&M. But looking at the schedules, it's feasible, looking at the two schedules, that A&M is going to finish better than Florida does, and A&M could end up having a better conference record than Florida does, right? That they could end up finishing higher than the SEC. A&M has not once, that I can see, and they may have at one point, and I've been keeping a pretty close eye on this, and maybe I missed them one day, for pretty much the entire season, A&M has not, even when they were 15-2, was not in bracketology. Was not even listed as a bubble team. You know why? Because they haven't really beaten anybody. Who's Florida beaten?
Nobody.
Florida has a win over Ohio State back in November that holds some water, okay, just because they're a top 18 team in college basketball. But outside of that, Florida's been really unimpressive. And when you watch them play basketball, it's nasty. Once again, I go back to point A that I made earlier. It was a rock fight last night. A&M's kind of in the same boat right now, but I'm saying, why is Florida in a better spot than A&M? You know why? Because bracketology in a lot of ways does operate like AP rankings. A lot of it is where you started is going to affect how you finish. And the teams that start higher than others do end up having more grace than the teams that start lower, even though those teams may have, in a way, like A&M's case, started hotter than a team like Florida.
Which is, it's just dumb when you think about it. And I like your take of the AP poll for basketball shouldn't start until conference play because non-conference games carry too much weight. Because I don't care what you say. Who you beat in November does not matter when it gets to March. That's 5 months apart. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a whole
different basketball team. It does matter, but sometimes it can be skewed. I think
it matters, but it shouldn't carry the weight that it does.
I think at times it can be I think it's irresponsible to go on either side of that spectrum to weigh it so much because mid-major teams need it. Mid-major teams need the non-conference schedule,
right.
Need to challenge themselves. But I think there has to be you have to look at it and say, okay, did they play a ton of teams? What were they on an average basis? Like, what did they do throughout rather than was this just a one-hit wonder? If you were 1-5 against AP top 25 teams, you only beat one team, but you got blown out by all the others, and that one team that you beat that was in the top 25 ends up not being in the top 25 at the end, and they're not very good, Michigan, you know, there are a couple teams that had those. Like, Arizona started getting some real attention when they beat Michigan. And granted, this Arizona team has justified their existence inside the top five. But some teams got wins over Michigan, and it was like, oh, they beat Michigan. And it's like a month later, Michigan's 6-6. And
exactly.
It's like that helped you get positive perception nationally that has now put you above some other teams, whereas originally maybe it shouldn't have.
Exactly. And I don't want to say that the non-conference games don't matter. That's a bad take. But they shouldn't
carry as much weight for one result.
Yes.
It should be the entire non-conference slate. What are you after that? Like, did you challenge yourself on average?
Yeah.
I think that's what you're getting at.
And a game in November, a team in November and a team in March is a completely different team. They take a complete 180, whether that's in the good way or the bad way. If you can find one basketball team that plays the exact same way, the exact play style, and the exact same team in November as they are in March, please let me know, because that's a miracle, because that just doesn't happen, because that's how good teams get better, and that's how bad teams get worse, coaches get fired, and all that crazy stuff. So I just don't think that non-conference games and schedules should carry as much weight as they do when it comes to the NCAA tournament.
Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the Wednesday edition of the show. Back on the line, we got about 5 minutes left in the Wednesday edition of the show. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins with you. Before we get out of here, it'll be The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Beck coming up from 4 to 6 p.m. on location at Big Mike's Steakhouse. Go and see them. Go hang out with them. Jason Caldwell, 24/7 Sports, will be with them as well. But we got about 5 minutes left in the program here on the Line, and then we'll send it out to Big Mike's Steakhouse. You know, something fun to talk about here. We got about 5 minutes left. I told you I was going to ask you about this earlier, and you said you had a take, too. So we were going to do Hot Take Wednesday, but we don't have to do Hot Take Wednesday. I'll just let you give the take in just a few minutes. But I do want to ask you this. Okay, this is from SportsCenter. SportsCenter tweeted this out. Happy Gilmore turns 26 today. Ooh. Who gives Shooter McGavin a run for his money as one of the best sports movie villains of all time? I can't believe that they're putting Shooter McGavin as one of the best sports movie villains of all time. I think he's pretty weak, but, you know, cowardly person. Ooh. Basically hiring a hitman to run over Happy Gilmore on tour, you know. But you got Shooter McGavin, Ivan Drago, White Goodman from Dodgeball.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Big Red, Johnny Lawrence from Karate Kid, Rachel Phelps, Bud Kilmer, Clubber Lang from Rocky, Gene Girard from Talladega Nights. Yeah, Ricky Bobby.
The Ballad of Ricky Bobby.
So what's your take here? I think far and above there's an answer, and a mutual friend of ours weighed in on this on Twitter. I follow him on Twitter. Former intern Dylan Lark said, Ivan Drago by a mile. Dude killed Apollo Creed and didn't even bat an eye, which is true.
Wow. Yeah, that's so we're picking from this list. I don't know, man.
No, there's other. There is a space for other. Best sports movie villain of all time in your mind, and I think Drago has got a real case for this.
Man, I'm very biased because
I mean they villainized that guy.
Talladega Nights, The Ballad of Ricky Bobby is probably favorite movie
of all
time.
John Gerard does not hold candle to Ivan Drago.
He's not necessarily a villain because at the end of the movie they end up making up anyway. But I like I don't know, man. I like John Gerard because of the movie, but if you want to talk about a villain, White Goodman.
That guy was pretty.
He was pretty evil. I mean, he was trying to.
Lives up to the Cobra thing.
Average Joe's gym, man. Yeah, and he did everything in his power
That's a weasel.
A villain, an evil man.
That was. I mean, even look at the picture that they've got there on SportsCenter. Okay, I mean everything about that. Ben Stiller played such a great role.
That was so good. Off that list, I'm taking White Goodman because he is evil. Went out of his way to shut down a no man's gym and couldn't even do it anyway. So give me White Goodman.
What about Johnny Lawrence being on this list? I'm not a fan of this. Have you seen Karate Kid?
I love Karate Kid.
We just became best friends.
You know who has not seen Karate Kid? Erica, my girlfriend, and I give her a lot of heat for it all the time.
It's a great TV show. Have you seen the new season?
Not the new season.
I've seen one episode. Please don't tell me. Okay,
I love the show.
Johnny Lawrence. Okay, if you remember Karate Kid, the movies,
the original Karate Kid.
Right. He just was mainly in the first movie. Kind of made an appearance in the second movie why am I forgetting his name right now? The Cobra Kai dojo leader.
Wow. All right, you put me on the spot. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Well, forget it. He, you know, breaks his trophy, but we never see anything of Johnny Lawrence ever again until the show comes out. And I'm going to tell you, it changes your perspective a little bit. I still don't like Johnny Lawrence in Karate Kid. I still think that he was a jerk and a bully, and I think he went overboard with some things, you know. But
he was definitely a jerk.
He also had bad leadership. He also had a bad adult figure in his life. Like John Kreese, that's who it is. It's Kreese, that's right. He had a bad adult figure in his life in Kreese. So, I mean, like, you know, I think that...
He's also just a kid.
I give some grace to Johnny Lawrence here. I don't think that you should categorize him as a villain, you know what I mean? And if you watch Karate Kid, he ends up becoming a protagonist. You can't help but feel bad for the guy that... I mean, his life may be astray, but you can't help but feel bad for the guy. And hope he succeeds.
I wouldn't call him a villain. He's a kid. I mean, come on, man. I wouldn't call him. He's the villain of the movie, I guess. But
he's the antagonist. But I don't know if antagonist means villain. Villain's pretty bad, right? Like villain is like. I mean, I guess by nature.
He tried to break his leg.
Yeah,
but
he did. He did gang up on him with four other dudes and beat him up.
That's pretty villainy, if you ask me.
That's fair. That's it for another edition of On the Line. Noah Gardner, Jacob Goins, back with you tomorrow. Same time, same place. You know where to find us.